Our sermon this morning is coming out of Luke chapter 5. This passage that I had Mr. Peace read here just a minute ago is an important passage to me because it reminds me about being anxious. It reminds me about fear and just being honest with you. I was one where, for some reason, certainly when I was younger, I was fearful. I was timid. I had bundles of nerves. I was one who didn't just charge straight ahead. Certainly, I was one who would think about worst case scenarios a lot of the time. As I've gotten older, the Lord has been working with me over that. But I'd be lying to you if I said that there still weren't times of anxiousness in my life, and I wonder sometimes what all I have missed out of. So let me ask you, have you ever felt like there was more to your life than what you're living? Have you ever felt the weight of making a decision that you knew would change the outcome of the rest of your life? And for some of you, that might have been to take a job out of state. That may be why you're here in Dallas. Some of you may have answered the call to our armed forces during wartime with no promises or guarantees you would ever return, but you knew for certain that you wouldn't be the same person when you returned if you did. Some of you never answered that call, and I did not. Some of you are sitting here tonight without ever having the courage to take the first step, and I want to encourage you to take the first step today. Our passage is Luke chapter 5, verses 1 through 11. Luke chapter 5, verses 1 through 11. As you're turning there, I want to give you just a little bit of context for what's going on here. Luke was the only Gentile writer of our New Testament. And what I mean by that, by being a Gentile writer, was that he wasn't Jewish. He was born outside of that, and he was influenced more by Greek and Roman philosophy and culture. And so he writes this gospel account of Jesus and his ministry to Gentiles, meaning people like you and me. And what he does is he goes around and he talks to eyewitnesses and he writes down their accounts of what's taking place so that we as Gentiles would understand what this Jewish Messiah was all about. He wants us to know things that would not just be easily understood by someone who grew up steeped in a Jewish tradition or Jewish culture. And so he writes certain things in certain ways. And when we're reading this passage, if you just read it straight through, I'm afraid you'll miss some of those things that are just inherent in the Greek culture, are in the Jewish culture that we would just miss out on. And so I'm going to spend a little bit of time developing this today. So please bear with me. But by the time we pick up in chapter 5, Jesus' miraculous birth has been explained and his meager upbringing as a carpenter's son had been shown. Jesus understood that his life was to be about the work of God, and he spent as much time as possible learning and discussing the Word of God in the synagogues. He grew in stature and favor with both God and men. He was baptized by John and tempted by Satan. Then he began his lonely ministry around the Sea of Galilee, where he performed miracles in synagogues, private homes, and among growing crowds. It was on a day like that where our passage begins. And Luke uses the first three verses to kind of give you a setting for the overall story that he's fixing to tell. So I want you to look with me at Luke chapter 5, verses 1 through 3. And we're just going to stop at the end of verse 3. He says, "On one occasion, while the crowd was pressing in on him to hear the word of God, he was standing by the lake Gennesaret. And he saw two boats by the lake, but the fishermen had gone out of them and were washing their nets. Getting into one of the boats, which was Simon's, he asked him to put out a little from the land, and he sat down and taught the people from the boat." I'll just stop there. So what we're seeing here is Jesus is doing exactly what we expect Jesus to do. He was baptized by John. He has been tempted by Satan, and so his ministry has begun, and the crowds are beginning to follow him. But this wasn't docile crowds, right? We need to have this in our mind that this is like the circuses in town and people want to see what's going on. And everybody has an opinion. So they're pressing in on Jesus everywhere he goes, and they either desperately want something from Jesus, or they just desperately want to hear maybe a word of encouragement for Jesus, or they absolutely distrust him and they are beginning to hate him and they are wanting to find something to persecute against him for. You see, there's a lot of emotion in this crowd. So don't just read this and say the crowds are pressing in on him. Understand that they are literally pressing in around him, just wanting to touch him, just wanting to be close to him. No one is passive in this crowd. So where are they at here? Our text says that they are on the lake of Gennesaret. Well, that's foreign to most of us, certainly. We know the Sea of Galilee, right? If you look in your Bible maps, you won't find the Lake of Gennesaret. The reason for that is because the Lake of Gennesaret is the Sea of Galilee. And the reason for the name change there was simply that there's a little city, a little town, just south of Capernaum on the west side of the bank there, that was called Gennesaret. And so all of the business that took place along that shoreline and out into that part of the Sea of Galilee was just known as commonly the Lake of Gennesaret. It was just that common body of water around there. So this isn't a special place, a mythical place. This is just the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus is doing exactly what we expect him to be doing. And the crowd is doing exactly what they have been doing since the time he began to preach. So what does it say here? Getting into one of the boats, verse 3, which was Simon's, he asked him to put out a little bit from the land. Why do you think that Luke wants to make the point that it's Simon's boat here? Certainly, from a literary perspective, he's wanting you to understand there's an introduction of a character here. There's an introduction of a character. But also what's taking place is that if you look at the other Gospels in Matthew and Mark and John, and you're looking at how Jesus' ministry begins, this is really the third time that Peter and Jesus have come together. At least the third time. And the two prior times, Jesus has asked him to follow. And every time that he does, evidently, Peter has found himself back out on the lake. So let me ask you, if someone has been asking you to do something that has been perhaps out of your comfort zone, perhaps something that might stir up a little anxiety within you, are you one that charges forward into that? Or are you one that may maybe get just a little bit reclusive and you go back into your safe zone and you try to maybe wait out that tension? I think this is a character trait of Peter's that we have seen. In this third instance, Luke is making the point that Peter has retreated again to one of his safety zones. So that's important for us to know, because of the events that follow, Jesus doesn't let us just live in safety, certainly. So let's look at what he says here. At the end of verse 3, it says that he sits down to teach the people from the boat. So he just assumes a natural rabbi's position. He sits down in the boat, and the people along the shoreline of the Sea of Galilee create a natural amphitheater. But what he has really done also is that he has got away from the people that are pressing in and pushing on and just wanting to touch. So he gets for his own safety into the boat, where the people aren't there, and they push out just a little bit beyond wading distance where the people would have followed them into the water, and he sits down and he begins to preach to them just as he has so many times before, correcting their misunderstandings of what the Old Testament law was saying versus what the heart of the Lord was requiring them to do. So we come to our first point, and I want you to know there's three. Following the call of Jesus requires obedience, recognition, and devotion. So read along with me verses 4 through 7. 4 through 7. And when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch." And Simon answered, "Master, we toiled all night and took nothing. But at your word, I'll let down the nets." And when they had done this, they enclosed a large number of fish, and their nets were breaking. They signaled to their partners on the other side of the boat, or in the other boat, to come and help them, and they came and filled both boats so that they began to sink. Now just stop, and I'm going to tell you now. Yes, you've heard this. If you've been in church your whole life, you've heard this, and you've seen the cartoon drawings, right, of them loading in all of the fish into the boat, and it's all kind of cartoony and fun. But make no mistake, this is a real occurrence. I will tell you absolutely, I believe that this really happened. This is an actual event. And it wasn't anything peaceful about it at all. This was a fearful encounter. So look at what it says here in verse 4. When he had finished speaking, you see, Jesus' attention had been on the crowds, and he was making sure that he was communicating the heart of his Father to the hearers. Because that was his purpose, was to make the Father known. He was there, and he was doing exactly what he was called and equipped to do. Look what it says here in verse 4. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, meaning he turned his attention fully and fixed his gaze upon Simon. Now the focus is directly on him. And he asked him to put out a little from the land. Right? Well, what does he do? Not just from the land, but into the deep. Out of comfort zone, certainly. Are you seeing this? And he says, let down your nets for a catch. Put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. That sounds like a simple sentence, but really, this is a very confrontational altercation. Because what he says here is, put out to Peter. Singular. So he looks at the boat captain, and he commands him to do something. And then before the captain of that boat, Peter, Simon Peter, can even answer, he turns and he looks to those employed by Simon Peter. And he orders them. You see, when he says to let down the nets, that's plural. Okay, this is a you do this and you all do this. So now the carpenter has assumed command of the fishing boat. Now, I was in construction for 16 years, and I was taught to take great pride in that. And I can tell you that it gets challenging to hear over and over and over again when somebody you know that doesn't really understand your profession begins to try to tell you how to do your profession. Right? And this is exactly the kind of attitude that Peter would be having here. In fact, notice the sarcasm that what Peter is saying here. Look at his response. He says, Master. Now, this is not a term meaning Lord or God. We want to read into that because we know who Jesus is. But at this point, all Simon Peter knows is that he's a gifted man, and he's certainly a good teacher. And so he's giving him just respect. This is no more than just saying sir or rabbi, okay? But he's giving him a little bit of respect. But notice it's a little bit veiled too. He says, Master, we toiled all night and took nothing. You see the exclamation point there at the end of that? See, that's not a benign sentence. He's saying, look here, preacher. I am the professional fisherman. Okay? It's daytime. The sun is out. It is not the time to fish. We've been fishing all night. In fact, we were fishing in the right place where we're supposed to be. And we cast our nets and there was nothing there. And so here we are. We're mending our nets and you just happened to show up. We want to go home. We want to go back to Capernaum. So, preacher, you seeing the sarcasm? But there's respect also. There's respect also. Because we know that Simon Peter's own mother-in-law has been healed right in front of Simon. We know that Simon has witnessed Jesus heal people directly. And he has heard Jesus preach on multiple occasions now. And so he knows he can't just go full bore sarcastic with him. And so he is giving him a little bit of respect and he finally relents. Just a little bit. He softens his position and he allows Jesus to take a little bit of control. Notice what he says here. But at your word, I let down the nets. So now, he's responding in action. Verse 6, and when they had done this, he obeyed. Do you see? When he had done this, they enclosed a large number of fish, and their nets were breaking. Make no mistake, as he's standing there putting out into the deep, and he sees his nets fall back into the water as he has seen all night long, all of a sudden, tensions have changed and everything is ratcheted up a bit when the lines started to get taut. And they hear the creaking of those ropes, and all of a sudden, the weight starts to pull to that one side of the boat. Tensions are raising. They're trying to pull the nets back up, right? But what's taking place here? They signal to their partners in the other boat to come and help them, right? There's a reason why. Because these businessmen, Simon, Peter, and then there was James and John, the sons of Zebedee, they were business partners. Each had a boat, and they would put the boat in between the two. It's a two-man operation. That shows you the faith that they had. They went out because Jesus told them to go out. Their expectancy was nothing. You see. But what they ended up doing was getting in over their head because they obeyed. And isn't that not true? When Jesus calls you to do something and you think very little may come of that, all of a sudden you're in way deeper than what you thought. And the Lord is beginning to work and you feel a little bit overwhelmed and you're beginning to wonder, how is all of this taking place? That's exactly where Simon Peter is. As he begins to see the fish filling up his boat and the water becoming ankle deep, he is seeing this and in full recognition of what's taking place. Look at verse 8. This is our second point. I'm going to read 8 through 10, the first half of 10. It says what? But when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." For he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish that they had taken, and so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, "Do not be afraid." Stop there. You notice what's taking place here is this second point. To truly follow Jesus, there has to be a humble recognition of who Jesus is and who you are not. And this is exactly where we find Simon Peter, standing ankle deep in water, fish all around him, and everybody in a frantic panic. He looks at Jesus, and his immediate reaction is to fall at Jesus' feet. The way that this is described is that he's throwing himself. He is down. He is face down. He is in the water. He is in among the fish. And he is there at Jesus' feet. And what are the words that's being said here? Notice that Jesus' divine power produces a fearful three-part confession here. Notice what this says. He says, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." Those are true words coming from this man. He says, "Depart from me. Get away from me. Leave me." How can he say this? Because he understands who he is. And he knows that he's in the presence of something that's far greater than he is. So what does he say? There's a point of confession here. What's his words here? What does he say? "Depart from me, for why? I am a sinful man." I'm a sinful man. It's odd words just to come from a fishing excursion, right? But he sees in the moment that he is in the presence of something far greater than he is. And he is rocked to his core because he knows that what he is seeing has nothing to do with him. This is all external and he just happens to be there. But where is he? Look at his last part of this statement here. He's crying out here and he gives you the word, "O Lord." Now in the Greek it's kurios. It's the word that we know for Christ. But he doesn't say, "You are the Christ," in Peter's great confession until Luke chapter 9. So I don't want to go so far as to say that he believes that this is certainly the incarnate God. But like when an angel of the Lord would appear and people were absolutely struck in fear and they were paralyzed in it. That's the exact kind of situation that he finds himself in. He had no other response but to crumble to his knees and say, "You are holy and I am not." You see, there is a direct correlation to him realizing who he is not and who the person that's standing in front of him is. And that is a messenger of the Lord. You see, there is a humble recognition that's taking place here from Peter. And then in verse 9, he says, "For he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish that they had taken." Well, yeah, certainly. Right, I would think so. But Luke continues to tell you this is plural. There's more than just Peter here, right? More than Simon Peter. And so he tells you here in verse 10, "And also were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon." Okay? They were business partners, which means that they were probably more financially secure than probably 96% of the population. Okay? Most people were just day laborers, and they would just work for enough food to get them, or enough money to get a little bit of food and lodging for the night, and they did that day in and day out. The people were oppressed by the Roman government, and they were absolutely poor. But if you were fortunate enough to be a business owner, you had just a little bit more. In fact, you might be able to own your own home, which is exactly the way Simon Peter was. If we remember, Simon Peter, Jesus came to Simon Peter's house. He was able to have a home where he had servants. His mother-in-law lived there. So he was a man who had something. Okay? And he was also in cahoots. He was business partners with the Zebedee family, right? And so James and John were there as well. But what does Jesus say to Peter's response? "Depart from me, O Lord, for I am a sinful man." And Jesus turns and says to Simon, "Do not be afraid." Now what you need to understand too here is that the language would say, "Stop being fearful." Meaning, don't add another fear to your life, Peter. I know that you are a fearful man. I know that every time I have come around, you have retreated back to your safe zone. But what's taken place? Jesus has gotten in his boat. He has walked over and gotten right in the middle of Simon's comfort space. He's made it uncomfortable. And not only did he make it uncomfortable, Jesus started to do things that were absolutely miraculous. And he showed that he's in control of even what Peter perceived to be a safe zone. You see? So he says, "Stop being fearful. Would you please trust me? I mean you no harm. I have a purpose and a plan for your life." That's what he's fixing to tell him. Quit being fearful. So let me ask you, are you wrapped with anxiety? Are there those times when you know that the Lord is calling you to do a certain thing and you say, "I don't know. I don't know about that." And you retreat. And you add it to your list of worries because all of a sudden something else isn't working just right. And before you know it, something else isn't working just right. And so you find yourself in a position that's really out of position. And it seems like everything has fallen apart around you, and it only compounds your anxiety and fear. And the Lord is simply saying, "Stop being fearful. See what I do. See who I am. See who I represent. These are not my words, but I say only what the Father tells me to say. This is holy, and it is righteous, and it is true, and I am trustworthy. Stop being fearful." So that leads us to our third point. The second half here of verse 10 begins to describe that a true follower of Christ must not only have an obedient nature to when Jesus calls you to do something, you must be able to go. But you have to be able to do that with a humble recognition. And now thirdly, he's telling you that what you must have is devotion. What you must have is devotion. Read with me here the second half of verse 10 and then verse 11. Jesus gives the purpose statement for their lives. He says, from now on, you will be catching men. And when they had brought their boats to land, they left everything and followed him. Such a simple couple of sentences there, right? But packed with so much. Life-shattering things. Jesus, God incarnate, looks him in the eyes and says what? From now on, from this day till your last day, I am giving you purpose. You are not to just wake up every day and go to work and go to bed and love and laugh and have a good time. But your life is more than that, and it is more precious to me than that. And my Father has a plan for you. He has a purpose for you. I am calling you to this purpose, and this is your purpose. No longer will you catch fish, but you will catch men. Now, if you're a non-fisherman in the room, you're trying to negate this. But if you read this with its true context, Jesus is certainly making a pun here. Because when he says that you'll be catching men, this isn't a fishing term. This is a war term, really, that he's using here. What he means is that you will catch men alive. You have a purpose, and your purpose will be to seize those who have been captured and enchained, being held captive. You will rescue. You will be a rescuer, and you will rescue these POWs, these prisoners of this war between righteousness and evil. I am sending you and setting you upon this path where you will go, and you will no longer catch fish for a harvest, but you will go into the outermost parts of the earth, and you will seize men and women alive. For the gospel's sake, for my Father's sake, just as I am doing now. Do you see? It's a far greater statement than just, hey, you're catching fish, but hey, you're going to do something else later. You're going to be great with people. Watch this. You're going to seize men alive. So what was the effect that had on Peter and James and John? Look at verse 11. He says what? When they had brought their boats to land, what else did they bring with them? The fish. All the fear and expectancy. All the questions that have been going on in their mind with what Jesus has been going on. They're bringing all of this baggage back to land, right? And so they have a choice to make. Do they get this crazy person off the boat and go back to Capernaum as quick as they can? Do they truly believe that he is a good teacher and listen? Do they truly believe that he is an agent of the Lord? And that he is truly setting them to a purpose, that their life is far greater than anything they could ever imagined it to be? You see, they're fishermen for a reason. It's because that's what their family trait was. And once they got through their early education, trying to memorize the books of the Old Testament, you know, they would be separated out. And those who showed potential to go into essentially seminary training, right? And you would go and learn your theological studies essentially at a graduate level. And you would learn to become a rabbi. So what you would do is you would just grow up naturally in the culture. You would learn memorize the first five books of the Old Testament. Can you imagine that much memorization? They would literally memorize this stuff. And then when they showed promise, they would be assigned to a rabbi, and they would follow this rabbi around. And they would watch his mannerisms, and they would watch the way that he spoke, and they would watch to see how he would respond and interact with people. And they would continue in their study so that they would know what the law says, so that they could be teachers of the law. But if they didn't show that kind of commitment, or they didn't show that kind of promise, they were just ushered back into their culture. They were sent back home, and they learned their family's trade. You see. And so Jesus is calling them to much more than a backpacking adventure. when he says, come and follow me, he is telling them in a true rabbi disciple terminology, come and follow me. Meaning come and be a learner. Come and hear me. Come and watch. Come and learn how my Father's love is flowing through me. And the Father loves His people through me. Through my humble submission to the Lord. I follow His will. I do His things. And that is your calling. And if you do this calling, you will seize men alive. Come, follow me. And what does it say that they did? They brought all of that baggage back to the shore. And they made a decision. And these businessmen who were better off than 96% of their population said, I will abandon it all. And I will follow. I will follow you. I will turn my life around. I will give everything away for the chance to be with you, for the chance to learn what this means to be a fisher of men. They gave up temporal rewards for eternal gain. Now, some of you have been wrestling with decisions. The Lord has been calling some of you. Maybe the Lord has been calling you to faith for the first time. And I don't know who you are. You may be old, you may be young. You may have heard this same sermon before. But the Lord is speaking to you now. Because His word does not go out void. And so I'm asking you, I am begging you, I am encouraging you to listen to the call of the Lord. Is He calling you somewhere today? Is He calling you to faith? Is He calling you to step out in obedience to do a certain thing, to follow a certain ministry, to follow a certain path, to get back into a relationship with someone that has been destroyed because of your stance on the gospel? And you've kind of written them off a little bit. Maybe the Lord is challenging you to say, stick with that, and you don't want to. Because it's hard and it's tough. Make no mistake, the Lord is calling you to something. So it is my prayer that you're listening to the Spirit. I'm going to ask Daniel to come and play a song for us. And I want you to know that the altar is open. I want you to be able to come. And if the Lord has been calling you to come and deal with Him directly over something, the altar is here for you. I'll stand down here in the front. And if you want to talk to me about becoming a follower of Christ, that is my heart's desire. Please come. Don't let this day pass. Don't let this time pass. The one who does the miraculous is calling.